There is a passion in this new... What the Americans were proposing, of course, was rebellion. The colonists preferred to call it independence. Like most kings, George III was very interested in rebels, particularly if they were going to rebel against him. Let them be hanged and drawn and quartered, is the way it was graphically stated in his court. Naturally, that would only happen if the rebels were unwise enough to lose. Still, who can guarantee success in a war? And to be allowed to practice law. Instead, he was named one of the 9 Pennsylvania delegates to the Congress. "I've been elected," James told his wife Elizabeth. "If elected's the word. But the position troubles me. I don't consider myself a weak man, but I'm a country lawyer. Not a very bold one at that. Most important, I've been taught to obey the law, not flaunt it. What else are lawyers to explain to their clients?" What else, indeed? James had to come to grips with the two opposed. America was his home now, not England. After all, it was the people of Massachusetts and Virginia who were strongly urging independence on the other delegates. James knew that life was harsher in those two colonies. But life was going well in Pennsylvania. Trade was flourishing, crops were growing. Truly, in Pennsylvania, the New South Wales of William Penn's dream, the rolling hills of Sylvania, there was a different climate. This was particularly true of the cities. As James put it, "It isn't the cities that want this fucking rich there. Business is good, and they live graciously in the great houses of the towns." And he was right. It was the rural areas that were demanding the head of the king. "Look at the counties that raised the fighting companies, Elizabeth. Cumberland, Lancaster, York, Berks, Northampton, Northumberland, Bedford." The fact remained, the city people were standing aloof. This was not their fight, they said. "We're Quakers, and we don't bear arms. It is morally wrong. Governments must exist," they said. And
"I've been named by the people, but I'm still allowed to vote my own conscience. My own conscience, Elizabeth. Oh, well, with instructions from the Committee of Safety in the county. Yes, just as the other delegates in their counties, but I am allowed to choose. I am allowed to choose. And we've had so little voice in what is happening, so little say in the king's government."
"James Wilson, you're an honest man. You'll know when you decide if it's right. It's a decision you make with your heart, James."
"What about the heart that cannot bring itself to choose? What of the heart that has to be sure it's right? I tell you, Elizabeth, there are no..."
"It would be nice to do some shopping, too. James, the lovely things in these Philadelphia stores. They're delightful. Have you seen them?"
Elizabeth was right, of course. The Second Continental Congress in Philadelphia, with many delegates like James, could not come to a quick decision. Voices of protest shouted in the historic old State House on Chestnut Street. And those fateful, hot summer days, beginning June 26th, became hotter as June 27th came, 28th, 29th, 30th, July 1st, July 2nd. So many things to look at, how could a decision be made at all? Elizabeth believed in priorities. She had told James, even before he'd left Carlisle, that he had decided, really. What was he fussing about now, she wanted to know. It seemed so simple.
"I don't understand you. How can it be simple to end our ties with the king? How can we throw it away, with nothing to put in its place? Where will it come from?" "Oh, I know what you'll say. From ourselves. From a free America. Yes. But there are others who share my doubts, Elizabeth."
"James from Delaware to go into the State House looking so disheveled, sir."
"How indeed.
You could do with a wash and some clean garments. You know, we're still deadlocked."
"Yes, I'm muddy and wet, but McKean sent me a message yesterday saying my vote could be the deciding one for Delaware's delegation. So I came from Dover as quickly as I could.
From Dover? But that's more than 70 miles away.
And I interrupted my 48th birthday party to make it.
And then I think you've made up your mind, too, how you will vote.
Well, Have I?
Elizabeth is right. Why would a man leave his birthday party and ride all day and night on that wretched road if he were only coming to oppose something?
Shall we hear the Liberty Bell?
Perhaps if we knew how Pennsylvania came into being, how this colonial keystone played such an important role in the destiny of not just the 13 colonies, but the future of the United States, we could understand why James Wilson so grimly declared that among people there were no heroes, just desperate men. Ten 10,000 years ago, Indians were the first people to inhabit what became Pennsylvania. And as they built, they never imagined that 3,000 miles away, in Europe, people were looking for new trade routes. When security possesses us all, time seems permanent. The Indians could not conceive that a new breed of people would come and eventually destroy their homes and their culture. They created their artifacts and their legends and named the mountains and rivers and towns, Tioga and Tuscarora, Nittany and Nanticoke, Allegheny and Aliquippa. And they couldn't picture a world with Wolf and Muhlenberg, Beisel and Weiser, Prince and Penn. In the 1600s, it was the Dutch who built a fort on Schuylkill River near present-day Philadelphia. In 1638, the people of Sweden came to the same area. Colonial rivalry began, and for about two decades after 1665, the Dutch, Swedes, and British all vied for control. But it was the British who finally held the land for a century. Eagerly, as a haven for his fellow Quakers, but was embarrassed that the province was named for his family. His fellow Quakers could not believe their good fortune. One by one they came to him. Was it true? Was the land really theirs? They could live in freedom without fear of riots? Had Brother William actually convinced King Charles that it was he and not the Duke of York or Lord Baltimore who deserved the land? To them all, Penn was able to give the same answer. It is duly registered under the Great Seal of England. We must not forget that our dear King Charles owed my late father over 14,000 pounds. And what an honest way for him to sign over the land to me to settle his debt, was it not? but I am jubilant over our good fortune. If only one small matter had not occurred, my happiness would be complete. But that stubborn king would not hear me out. I asked that our land be called New South Wales, and it should have been, with its woodland and rolling hills. Yet a Welsh undersecretary to the king would not listen to my suggestion.
William, an undersecretary in King Charles's court, above taking a bribe? How times have changed, brothers.
William Penn practiced the Quaker ideals he so firmly believed in. But he was also a man of culture, of tremendous wealth, and a courtier in King Charles' court. True, he antagonized some people. He was expelled from Oxford, beaten, estranged from his father, imprisoned several times, and lodged in the Tower of London. He was a rebel, a law student, and a theologian. The governor, he was the feudal lord of Pennsylvania. And it was never said of him that he lacked style.
John, you were playing with those boys again.
I didn't mean anything, Papa.
A fine young fellow like you, oldest son of the governor of Pennsylvania, and playing in the mud with a group of laborers' children.
I was running away from Thomas, Papa. He's always hanging around.
I think he'd be glad for the company of your brother.
and he spoils all my games. And besides, he's too real.
Still, I should like...
The end of time, Papa? When's that?
Forever, John. But great wealth also carries an obligation with it. Do you understand what I mean by the word obligation?
Does it mean a debt, Papa?
Yes, good. Exactly. A debt. Exactly what it means. And even if you don't understand everything I say, if you just remember what I say, I'll be most pleased.
I'll try, Papa.
Just as I tried to be a patriarch toward our colonists, I was thinking that you should learn languages such as Latin and Greek and French and German, because an astute politician must talk with all his people. You see, you're my little American, my only child born here in Philadelphia itself. That makes you very special. But you must never forget, it was your father who founded the state of Pennsylvania, and one day you will be governor.
Papa, will I have to be dressed up all the time?
Well, probably, but...
The Indians. Through his fairness in dealing with them and his recognition of them as people, the colonists of Pennsylvania enjoyed 75 years of peaceful coexistence with the tribes of the Six Nations. A sense of charity pervaded everything he touched, and the Indians were not denied his strong feelings of justice. They are not savages, he told his brothers, not one among them. They are people, and they deserve our respect and kindness. I plan to sign treaties with them all. Even though the King's Charter clearly gives me full title to the land, we cannot turn our...
To those settlers protesting that a jury could surely not condemn a fellow pioneer against an Indian, Penn answered quietly but firmly.
The weaknesses of man are many, my brothers. This problem has bothered me for some time. But I have decided that all such juries be made up half of settlers and half of Indians. The Indians must have liberty to live as we do, in peace with our friends and neighbors. If a man is going to govern, surely the poorest way he could choose would be by deception.
Peace was established in Pennsylvania through William Penn, and with it, great prosperity. Then another outstanding man appeared. Benjamin Franklin came to Philadelphia in 1723. A towering figure, he arrived friendless and penniless, but far from witless. This delightful man busied himself making a living as a printer, but it was also Mr. Franklin who narrowly missed electrocutory to chase out the French. The results were somewhat less than successful. The next year, this time as lieutenant colonel and leading 150 troops, Washington again tried to rid Pennsylvania of the French. He opened fire. The very first shots of the seven-year-long French and Indian Wars. He and his men also built an earthen fort. He called it Necessity. But again, he had to surrender his command when the French surrounded his troops. A year later, determined and grim, Washington returned to western Pennsylvania. And this time he accompanied General Edward Braddock, a Scottish-born British general and a stubborn, cocksure soldier.